So to name just a few things our next guest has done: abseiling into an erupting volcano in the Democratic Republic of Congo, rowing the Atlantic, getting locked in a bunker for 10 days with no daylight, leading Steve Backshall into the jungle, or being held at gunpoint. All of them have been achieved by our next man, who has written it all down in his new book, Lessons from the Edge. It's the legendary Aldo Cain who joins us now. Good morning, Aldo.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Lovely to talk to you. I noticed in my research for you that you're from Kilwinning in Ayrshire, by the way.
I am a Kilwinning man myself.
I know it well because I was born and brought up in Glasgow, and of course everybody in Glasgow goes to Silcoats or Ardrossan on their holidays. It's very local to you.
That's right. Down to the beach. I was going to say, not many people know where Kilwinning is on the map.
They did some wonderful ice creams, as I recall, as a child in Silcoats Seafront. So it's a long way from Kilwinning to the Democratic Republic of Congo. So where did this journey begin for you? What was it that you were wanted? The school teacher said to you, "So, Aldo, what do you want to do when you grow up?" What was your answer?
My answer was I want to join the Royal Marines and become a sniper. So on my work experience at school, they sent me to a menswear store in Irvine to do a week, folding jeans and shirts.
That's brilliant. I love it. And you joined the Royal Marine Commandos very young, didn't you?
Yeah, at the age of 16, I passed my sort of tests and things when I was 15 in 9 months, and then joined when I was 16, halfway through my exams. And that was me then in the Royal Marines for the next 10 years, basically, sort of traveling all over the world and doing what Royal Marines do.
Amazing.
I guess you could say that was really my education.
Was I right in saying that you were in the Scouts? Was that the kind of normal everyday Boy Scouts?
It was, yeah. I talk about it in the book, basically how, you know, going from being in the Boy Scouts and cadets down in Kilwinning, and then through into the Royal Marines. It was like such a good grounding, and then you know, then using all those skills from the Scouts into the Marines, and then, you know, following on. That's really what Lessons from the Edge is. It's about all of the things that I've learned in my life in extreme locations that are able to then be put down on paper and help people in their everyday life. So it's more like an adventure help book than a self-help book, that's for sure.
Just even seeing the word Scouts just takes me back to kind of really happy days. You know, the Scouts were a brilliant thing. I was in the Sea Scouts, which was even better. I was on the Isle of Wight at the time, so that was a fantastic thing to be in. Difficult to pitch a tent on the sea, but nonetheless, we persevered. the badges you earn and the kind of the stuff that the life skills that you learn are invaluable, aren't they?
Well, that's, yeah, exactly. And, you know, I was lucky that my dad got me into the Scouts when I was very young. You know, I did Beavers, Cubs and Scouts. But really, what I did in the rest of my life was an extension of that adventurous sort of spirit that the Scouts gave me. And, you know, through the rest of the book, I'm talking about my time in Iraq, or whether I'm in West Africa during the Ebola crisis, working with narcos in South America, you know, tracking down tiger traffickers in Southeast Asia. And all of those things can be traced back to essentially when I joined the Scouts.
How amazing. Yeah. I didn't even know. I mean, the Scouts, I'm sure, still exist, but I never hear anybody talking about it anymore. I wonder if it's still a thing that people are keen to do.
Yeah, the Scouts are more than a thing. When we were a kid, you know, the Scouts now bear Grills is Chief Scout, and you know, we've got Steve Backshaw, Ed Stafford, Meg Hind, Dwayne Fields. There are so many ambassadors now that are pushing Scouts, and actually I'm kind of out the loop. I just know that most places that you go to, there's a waiting list as long as your arm to actually enroll your kids into the Scouts.
Oh, how fantastic. I'm pleased to hear that. So let's talk about your life early on, and the commando training course that you went on. This is not a walk in the park, frankly, the commando training course, is it? The 30-week basic course.
Yeah, it's the longest infantry training in the world. And, you know, the Royal Marines are the British Sea Soldiers. So you were talking about the Sea Scouts.
Yeah.
And, essentially, you know, that's, you know, the Royal Marines, we operate on land and sea. So we're commandos in the truest sense of the word. And, yeah, that training's, it's down in Devon, Limston. So I was packed myself onto a train when I was 16 and then headed off. And really, I've not really been home for very much since that happened. And like I say, you know, the commando ethos is probably the one thing that stuck with me through my entire life. You know, all the other things like being a sniper and being able to shoot and, you know, camouflage and concealment, all those skills fade away and, you know, it's skill fade. But the commando spirit, the ethos of courage, determination, unselfishness and cheerfulness in the face of adversity have stuck with me from then all the way through until now. And I use it, you know, every day in my working life, whether I'm leading a crew down inside an active volcano or whether I'm deep in the mangroves or leading expeditions underground in caves. But, you know, bringing it all back round is essentially, you know, I can trace it back to the Scouts. I can trace it back to the Marines. And, you know, these interchangeable skills now that I have is, you know, it transfers straight into being able to look after film crews in extreme remote and hostile locations.
I'm fascinated that your chosen specialty was to be a sniper. For those of us whose only experience of such things is playing video games and taking on the role of a sniper, it looks to me like A, incredibly difficult, and B, incredibly lonely.
Yeah, that's it, it's, you know, the course, the Royal Marines course is one of the hardest sniper courses in the world to pass. It's I think 13 weeks long now, but essentially, you know, it's about becoming an absolute expert in field craft and lots of other disciplines. But you know, the failure rate on that course is quite high, and it's quite a tough job physically and mentally to do. But that, I guess it's, you know, again, that course and that training then allows you to become, you know, I guess you're one of the best field craft soldiers in the world at that point. I must say, I wouldn't be able to hit a barn door at the minute. It's been quite a
Yeah, I imagine some people just can't be snipers because they wouldn't be able to keep themselves steady in one position for the length it required.
It's a very, you know, you're working in pairs and you know, you're working under your own routine, so it's not suited for everyone, and it's a lot of the skills that come from it are much more about your it's much more about your personality and your personality traits and type of person, as opposed to being able to carry heavy packs and being fit, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, I kind of, in the book I talk about the training course and what's involved in that and then where that sort of led me to in life. And really that was, you know, at the end of coming out of the Marines and that turning point, you know, 10 years in one specific job where it's a lifestyle, not just a job, and coming out and then feeling sort of lost and not really knowing where to go. And then, you know, I guess this book really is about finding my passion or finding your passion when you read it and sort of lighting a fire under it.
Yeah. Just to finish on the sniper thing, I mean, the training part of it is one thing, but when you deploy operationally, you're presumably spending long periods with just one other spotter and pretty much nothing in the way of backup. And there's other people who are trying to find you and snipe you.
That's generally the way it works. What you lose in backup, I suppose, and what you lose in having support, you gain by being very autonomous and you can move around the battlefield fairly unhindered because there's only two of you.
Yeah.
And so that's what a lot of the training is about, is actually, you know, navigation, map reading, you know, camouflage and concealment and vehicle recognition, etc. So really, I mean, you know, it's when I look back, it's sort of such a different world to what I operate in now. But, you know, even now when I'm running out, say, 2 kilometers of ropes inside a volcano and I'm on my own, I kind of look back and think I've always worked on my own. I've always worked in a very small team, whether it be me and a spotter or me and three other people. So it's actually quite similar in the strange way.
Yeah, interesting. And so the path then from commando to telly, how the heck did that happen?
Yeah, so for anyone that doesn't know, I work in, you know, my company provides safety really for television and film productions that are working in extreme remote hostile locations. So let's say, for example, a film crew wanted to go and work in the Democratic Republic of Congo in a volcano, or they want to go and work in a cave system in Italy.
Yeah.
Usually it's my job to sort of mitigate a lot of the risks, identify the hazards and mitigate the risks, and really just be a safe pair of hands that's looking out for the production. Because you got to remember that, you know, when we are out making all these extreme television programs, there's a camera guy there, a producer and a director who are doing everything that we are doing, but they're doing it with kit and cameras and Absolutely. Usually doing it backwards. So really, they're the ones that the credit goes to. But essentially, that's what I do. I look after these crews. And one day, I was sort of working, when I left the Marines, I was working offshore and up in the North Sea. And a friend had asked me if he'd heard through another guy that they could, there was a BBC expedition heading out to a volcano, and was I interested in doing the safety? And I had never done anything like that before. I'd led expeditions to the jungles of South America and all over the world, really, but I hadn't ever connected the dots between television and me doing that as a job. And
yes.
I went down to the Congo, got these guys into this volcano. We did some filming and then we came out, and then I sort of got back home to Glasgow at the time, and the penny dropped. I was like, wow, there's jobs here in exciting remote places that you know I've got this skill set for. Because for years after leaving the Marines, I kind of felt a bit lost, and that I didn't have very many transferable skills from Royal Marines commando sniper to what working in an office. So suddenly I found this industry that was very similar to the military. It's small teams working in remote locations to tight deadlines and schedules. And yeah, the penny dropped. That was my first job in television. And really since then, over the last 12 years, I've just been honing those skills and basically being a jack of all trades.
Amazing. I've been in radio all my life, and I know a lot of TV people, and their job when they're out to do these kind of things that you're discussing there is to get the best program they can, obviously. And the danger that surrounds that really probably wouldn't even enter their heads, which is where you guys came in. But it must almost be like trying to look after a small child in a sweet shop. They're not really interested in behaving themselves. They want the sweets.
Yeah, if you, like so many situations, you know, you have a camera guy standing on the edge of a, you know, Angel Falls, for example, and you know, we have to rope them in because they're 1,000 meters up, and they're looking through the viewfinder of the camera, and they're not paying attention to what's around them. So really, you know, our job is keeping these guys safe while they get the amazing shots. And it has literally taken me all over the world, like I say, from like all the narco work, Ebola, you know, just it's just so varied and so interesting. And really, when I decided to write the book, it was more that when you travel the world and you do all these amazing things, there are so many things that you can learn. And really, it was about tying it back in so that people can learn from what I've been doing.
Yes, absolutely. And that the book really also is about the real person in the street, not just somebody who's going to go and attempt something dangerous, but however hard things are, you can, with the right head game, get through anything that life throws at you. And that's something that you've overcome a lot of stuff, that feeling worthless, doors slammed in your face, and you've got to kind of change your mindset in order to get out of that.
That's right. Yes, the stuff that I've been doing over the last sort of 20 years has been sort of out there as far as a job goes. But, you know, we face some of the biggest and hardest decisions and anxieties in a real everyday life. You know, it's easy for me to be in the jungle you know, trying to, I don't know, break a record or you know, even just, you know, schlepping through the jungle for a month nonstop, you know, that's easy because it's physical.
Yeah.
But when it comes to making real decisions involving real people in real life, then that's always harder. You know, real life is always harder. And some of these lessons that I've learned over the years, you know, are directly applicable. You know, yes, in extreme environments, the consequences are often different. But in real life, you know, everything is just as important to, you know, to people when they're going through it. So, yeah, the book is you know, it's not a self-help book by any means. No. I'm not a psychologist. But no. What it is an adventure help book. And it, I guess, should come with a bit of a warning, because it does, when you read it, I've been told, make you want to get up and get outside and make the most of it.
And I guess there's a lot of people, to be honest with you, who reading that book now will do exactly that, because, of course, the last 18 months, 2 years has not exactly been easy for anybody, has it?
Well, that's, I mean, these tough times that we're going through at the minute, there are so many things that you could look at in a negative way. But really, a lot of it's out of our controls. And that's one of the big lessons in the book, is control the controllables. We only have dominion over a very small percentage of the things that actually happen in their life. So take control of those and then forget about the rest, because in life, you know, stuff happens that's out of your control. And and by trying to control that, it's a sort of a set course for anxiety and upset.
Absolutely. As a man who's done all this stuff, is there anything that you are afraid of? Have you got any phobias or fears?
I, to be honest, you know, a lot of people think that, you know, the line of work that we work in is, you know, we're risk takers, or the phrase adrenaline junkie gets bandied around.
Yeah.
Really, we are control freaks. I'm a control freak. You know, we mitigate so many hazards.
Yes.
In everyday life, you know, we control so many of these things. So there's actually a lot that I'm scared of. You know, when I abseil off Angel Falls, for example, it's 1,000 meters, 3,000 feet. You know, I understand the complexities of the system that I'm using, and also its weaknesses. And yes, that, I mean, it's terrifying in some places, but fear is nothing to be afraid of. You know, fear is one of those things that is an emotion, and it's there specifically to guide and help you. You don't have to become a slave to it. But what you do need to do is acknowledge it. As with every other emotion, you know, it's an important part of life and keeping us alive.
You've been to some incredible places. I think 6 of the 7 continents on Earth, and well over 100 countries. In terms of, is it possible to give us a kind of top couple of places that, you know, that your job has taken you to, that you've just thought, my goodness me, I'm so lucky to be here?
Yeah, I was very privileged to be asked by Steve Backshaw a couple of years ago to join him on 10 of his world first expeditions. And in that 11 months, I think we did these 10 expeditions almost back to back. And I have to say that was one of the best years of my life with regards to travel, but with regards to expanding my sort of viewpoint on the world. And, you know, we paddled it. We, all of them world firsts, but we paddled across Scoresby Sund in Greenland, climbing mountains that have never been climbed before, and flying into the jungles of Suriname and climbing, you know, big wall cliffs in Oman. And I have to say, of that year, I would probably say my favorite was Suriname. For me, I love jungle,
right.
And I love it because it's difficult terrain to operate in, and Suriname was one of the most beautiful, pristine places that I've ever been, and the expedition was utterly pure. I loved it.
And again, probably a tricky question, but has there ever been a moment in your life when doing these amazing things that you thought, this is it, I've gone too far here, it's all over?
It happens a couple of times, and in a way it's easy to sort of ratify in my brain, because you mitigate as many of the hazards as you can, and then you accept objective danger of, I don't know, let's say being in the volcano and dealing with poisonous gas or lava bombs. You kind of, is kind of easier to reconcile like that than, you know, having a near scraper, a near miss on the M4, you know, at 4 o'clock in the morning and a car careers across the road towards you.
Yeah.
So I kind of write that off in my head. But yeah, there's a couple of times I was in that same volcano when a big sort of vent opened up and I was just about to abseil down on top of it. So it would have been curtains. But, you know, like my good mate Jason Fox says, but you didn't, you know, I didn't die, so yeah. I didn't. You know, so that's the thing. And, you know, my job is about taking people away and making these extreme places safe so that they can film them. And that's essentially what we do. And, you know, there are times when you just cannot make a situation safe. You know, if the rain's been coming down for 3 days and the river's up, then it's just not paddleable. You know, you just don't do it.
Yeah. I'm fascinated to know your view on certain other people who don't have a choice really about entering these dangerous situations. I'm thinking, for example, here recently we had quite a lot of very bad wildfires up on the mountains here in the Costa del Sol. And, you know, those people were there day after day, night after night, you know, in dreadful circumstances, flying aircraft, helicopters on the ground, beating fire, you know, because that was their job. And that's, you know, that's what they had to do. There's some extraordinary people in the world, aren't there, out there, Haldo?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and this, you know, my book talks about me and my story, right? And, you know, I feel very privileged to be able to tell that story. But actually, in the real world, there are people out there every single day doing some utterly incredible things that will never have the chance to tell that story because yeah. they're too busy doing it, or they don't, you know, they don't have the way or means of doing that. And a class example that I talk about in the book is the Ebola outbreak in West Africa and yep. how, yep. you know, these three or four countries were absolutely stricken by this killer virus and how, you know, these normal GP doctors were then thrown into the front line of killer, unseen enemy, a killer virus. Mm-hmm. And we were filming with MSF down there and a couple of other organizations, and we were just utterly blown away by the selfless determination that they had to beat the virus. And again, you know, it's almost like the commando spirit that they had, with courage, determination, unselfishness and cheerfulness in the face of adversity. And like you said, you know, the biggest, hardest, scariest stories out there are usually from people that we'll never hear from. It's something I would like to learn more about.
Absolutely. Well, I guess there's not much left to achieve, is there? Do you have on your iPhone or whatever the diary of what's coming up in the next year? Is it a full diary? And if so, is there anything outstanding in there that you're looking forward to particularly?
Yeah, I've just had a hectic. My phone diary, I live and die by. But I've just had a fairly busy year on this Ocean Explorers project, which is a James Cameron BBC Studios series for National Geographic, and so we've just spent the last year exploring the oceans from the Arctic up at 82 degrees north, all the way down to down into the Azores and down into the Caribbean, Dominican Republic. And really this show for the last year has been about ocean conservation and trying to show the world just how insanely valuable and amazing the ocean is. With, you know, on this vessel, we have so many, you know, submarines, helicopters, like we've got the full gamut of instruments there. So it's been a busy year. And then I don't have anything booked in for the next couple of months, but that show comes out next year. So I'm looking forward to that. And really, I'm looking forward to spending a bit of time at home. I just had my first son 7 months ago. So
brilliant.
So I've got the next few months off to spend with him.
Fabulous. I guess you're not a fan of soap operas. It'd be kind of hard to keep up, wouldn't it? By the time you've missed so many episodes, you'd have to take you months to catch up.
Yeah, to be fair, I don't watch much television, so I can never commit to anything for longer than a day or two.
But I think you take your music with you, don't you? So that's by your side. You like listening to music?
Exactly. Always take my music with me. That's pretty much what I live and die by.
Right. So if you had a go-to song that you're hanging on the edge of a volcano and you're thinking, oh God, this is it, what's the song you're putting on?
Probably AC/DC.
Thunderstruck. Oh, good man. Good man. Aldo, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. The book is brilliant. Lessons from the Edge. I know you're very busy. I'll let you get away. Aldo Kane, thank you for joining us on Let's Talk. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much. Appreciate that.
Take care. Bye-bye.